The Transportation Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. You have a lot of material in your packets, specifically with the bills that we're going to be addressing today. But would I entertain a motion for the passing of minutes?
I'd be happy to move that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Beard.
Board, I am Board.
Moves at the minutes of February 8th as presented in your packet. Pass. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The minutes are approved. Thank you, Mr. Representative Beard. The first, we have some bills up today, and the first bill is House File 546 with Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Members, I'd like to move House File 46, recommend for passage, and re-referral to the Finance Committee.
Representative Hornstein moved House File 546 and passed and sent back to the full Finance Committee. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm just going to very briefly talk a little about the intent of House File 546, but we have Jennifer Levison and some other members from AFSCME who will get into the details, and I believe they have a brief PowerPoint presentation that they'd like to share. But members, this bill is a response to, I think, an increasing trend towards contracting out, if you will, services that were traditionally done in the public sector, that were have traditionally been done in the Department of Transportation. And let me just let you know what this bill is and isn't. It's not a ban. It's not a moratorium on this practice. It's simply an effort to provide some more public accountability, shed some sunshine, if you will, on this practice, and then requires we have some definitions in Section 1, but then requires in page 2, you'll see various things that the department needs to do in order to, I think, satisfy some very important taxpayer interest in terms of the costs and benefits of this practice, and some reporting requirements as well. There's a fiscal note with the bill that deals primarily with some additional staffing that MnDOT may need in order to prepare the proper reporting requirements that are in this bill. So with that, members, I would like to turn it over to Elliot Side, who is the Executive Director of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees in the state of Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Side.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you very much for having us today. We greatly appreciate it. What we'd like to do, if it's all right, Mr. Chairman and members, is we have a short PowerPoint presentation that we think aptly describes the problems that we're facing and some of the things that are addressed in this bill and other transportation bills this committee is addressing. So if that's all right, Mr. Chairman, I'll move ahead with the PowerPoint.
Okay, fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Elliot Side. I'm the Executive Director of AFSCME Council 5. Here with me today is Bob Hilliker. Bob is the transportation liaison to the Department of Transportation. He has been a 25-year staffer, former maintenance worker in the Department of Transportation. He has worked with Democratic, Republican, and independent administrations in the Department of Transportation and is one of our top experts on the department. We've got a serious staffing crisis in the Department of Transportation. We believe that chronic disinvestment has crippled the transportation system, and this costs the typical Minnesota commuter about $1,000 a year in wasted time and fuel. We think it's time to stop admiring our transportation problem and solve it. And that's why AFSCME's presentation today will identify solutions to our problems, the DOT staffing crisis and the design build failures in the bill that you're dealing with right now. The problem, very simply, is that MnDOT is broke. No matter what they tell you, MnDOT is broke. It is starving maintenance. It is postponing construction. It's robbing rural to pay for metro. Its driving has become extremely dangerous all throughout the state. And now the department wants to cut 500 more jobs in the Department of Transportation and they want to privatize even more work. There's a major DOT staffing crisis. If you take a look at Exhibit A in your packet, we have Exhibit A, and I'll better point that out to you. That's this one. Nearly 600 Department of Transportation ASPE positions have been lost under the Plenty administration. In 2002, there were 3,247 jobs. In 2006, there are 2,660 jobs, or 587 fewer positions. Department of Transportation workers spend their paychecks in local communities throughout the state. When DOT cuts jobs, local communities lose our spending power. By cutting these positions, Minnesota communities lost nearly $144 million. The department lacks the staff and resources to keep Minnesota moving. I'd like you to take a look, if you could, Mr. Chairman and members, at Exhibit B, which comes right out of the department. It's a shift report from the Department of Transportation. And also Exhibit C, which is our news release that we did about it. So B is a shift report from the department itself, and C is an ASPE press release. As you can see, during the worst snowstorms this winter, plows will be parked due to understaffing in every region of the state. The metro was paralyzed by a simple 1 inch of snow on February 6th. 87 plows were parked. There were 236 accidents on slick roads. There were 184 drivers for a metro fleet of 251 plows, and 191 drivers a short statewide. Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, plows were parked while there were accidents on the road because there were not enough staff people to fill those plows. Statewide, in all eight district Department of Transportation districts, there are 815 plows. There are 1,358 drivers. For two shifts, you need twice as many drivers as plows to get the job done. That makes us 191 drivers short, while 135 plows are parked in Minnesota. In Minnesota, in the winter. Next slide shows what we're dealing with. We have dangerous winter driving. Winter driving is dangerous because the Plenty-Molnau administration has put budget cuts ahead of public safety. The department relaxes its standards for safe winter driving every time it shrinks its budget. Lieutenant Governor Molnau told us we didn't need Cadillac snow removal. A Chevy plan would do. This winter, she's giving Minnesotans a dangerous Yugo plan. And it's just not working for any of us. We have more work and fewer workers. Photo one is a picture of potholes on West Highway 10 in Wadena. Photo two is a fractured bridge on I-35 in St. Paul. Photo three is a collapsed manhole in Madison, Minnesota. 30% more lane miles have become available in the last decade. Pavement has deteriorated beyond the eligibility for federal funds. 15% We have 15% more bridges in the last decade, and 30% of our bridges are what the department calls fractured critical. I'm just going to ask Bob Hilliker to briefly explain what it means to have deteriorated pavement not eligible for federal funds and what fractured critical means so you understand that. Bob?
Okay. Our understanding on the pavement conditions is when that has a machine or a truck that goes out and tests the pavement statewide, what conditions it's in for matching federal funds, pick up federal money, and some of our roads in Minnesota have reached a condition that are below 80% pavement conditions. I think Rochester's got the prime example of some of the worst pavement conditions down there. And some of that, you start to lose federal match money on it if you don't meet a certain criteria required by the feds. So the last we discussed with the department, we had an understanding that some of the roads, they could lose money if they didn't bring it up to the 75 or 80 percentile pavement condition piece. That's kind of an overview of what that is.
A fractured critical, Bob?
I'm not a bridge worker. Bart Anderson, our bridge employee here, can probably explain what that means. Want to step up, Bart?
Bart Anderson is a bridge inspection worker, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Syed,
yeah.
I appreciate everything you had here, but you kind of caught me off balance. I didn't think we're getting, I think this is, in a sense, enough for a committee of it itself. I'm concerned about the relationship to the bill.
Let me move forward then and get directly to that part. Let me get right to directly to that, Mr. Chairman. Just to point out just what you have in front of you. If you look at the next exhibit, Exhibit D, you'll see that related to the governor's credit card plan, we've done research, and we believe that that we're going to need to borrow $1.7 billion over the next 10 years, and that'll waste $859 million paying interest on 30-year bonds. And we're going to be forcing grandkids to pay for the roads we use today. And these calculations are based on the governor's bonding proposal. So that we're going to need some kind of investments to do this. Some other bad choices that we see out there, the Wisconsin model, again related to this bill and to other bills you have before you, the Wisconsin model, transferring road maintenance to the counties, resulting in uneven quality based on the fiscal condition of each quality, or toll roads that start out temporary and then become permanent. Toll roads are not something that Minnesotans have embraced. Our first solution to these problems is to dedicate a sales tax. And I recognize, sir, that's another bill that you have before you. We want you to know that Aspen Council 5 supported the constitutional amendment for better roads and transit. It will add $300 million a year by 2011. But that's only a 20% down payment on our transportation problem. Our new revenue will save only 40 jobs. That 20% figure is provided by the Transportation Alliance, not by AFSCME. We believe we need to have a gas tax, and I recognize that's not up in front of you today, but we think that's how we close the investment gap with a 10-cent gas tax. We haven't seen one since 1988. Pump prices rise, we think, 10 cents between breakfast and lunch. In fact, just the other day, they actually rose 17 cents between breakfast and dinner. And we believe that we should be building, maintaining, and repairing roads instead of paying interest to do so. Just want to show you something else about the condition of the roads before we get to design build. Take a look at this picture. For nearly two decades, we haven't raised the gas tax. Back when we invested in our roads, some of you will remember, Governor Perpich had a little shouting match going with Governor Janklow over in South Dakota about what the condition of the states were. Governor Perpich held a news conference at the Minnesota-South Dakota border near I-90. He compared Minnesota's smooth, safe roads with the dangerous potholes on the South Dakota side. Unfortunately, today, we're the state with the dangerous roads. We believe that we've got to stop design, build, waste, and that's specifically what this build is meant to do. With design, build, private contractors win while taxpayers and state workers lose. With design build, we have to ask ourselves who's working for whom. Are the contractors working for DOT, or is DOT working for the contractors? This photo shows that contractors have front row parking at the MnDOT office at Water's Edge. In fact, contractors are 300 feet closer to the entrance than handicapped visitors. Our concept in AFSCME is that taxpayers are our customers. MnDOT apparently believes the contractors are their customers. Design build versus design bid build, which is one of the issues that we're meant to look at today in this bill, so that we can get a handle on what's going on here in terms of money spent and get more accountability for taxpayers. Public employees with Department of Transportation can do nearly any job better, faster, and at a lower cost than the private sector. Although design build can sometimes accelerate a project completion, design bid build is a more cost-effective and efficient process. For example, Rock 52 is done, but DOT District 6 is now broke and can't afford to repair the worst pavement in the state. We need some oversight in where these dollars are being spent. The department is seeking to outsource design. This DOT document shows plans, and this is a DOT document, to outsource design work that's performed by AFSCME members. Look at the pre-construction and construction columns. The dotted white line shows the current workforce. The solid white line that dips down shows the outsourcing of our jobs. The department has already put this plan in motion with a metro pilot project. We're talking about design, survey, oversight, all those pieces of the department. Let's look at what design build has gotten us so far. The Wakota Bridge and the Wakota Bridge project. A design flaw caused cracks in new 494 bridge over the Mississippi River, the Wakota Bridge. The design changed, strengthening the material, added $15 million to a $58 million project. The second span near Newport won't open until 2011. It's now delayed 3 years. That's what our bill is meant to do, is to provide oversight and protection for the taxpayers over this kind of delays, overspending, and time wasting. Let's take a look at Highway 52 in Rochester. In order to do that project, we borrowed from all DOT districts to accelerate the project. District 6 is now repaying $16 million a year out of the program delivery budget for the next 10 years. Mr. Chairman and members, we can't afford to maintain the existing system and with the worst pavement conditions in the state as a result of having to pay back the debt from that project. Crosstown Commons, I think everyone's familiar with this one. One of the most dangerous bottlenecks in the state. Construction's delayed. Road builders won't front the $90 million. It's been delayed a decade until 2007 due to a lack of funding. Steel, fuel, and material costs rise with each delay. This is not an efficient, effective, or taxpayer-beneficial way to deliver a public service. And now we're suffering from the lack of state matching funds. There's pictures of Trunk Highway 53 near Orr. Without committing state matching funds, Minnesota can't leverage significant federal funding. Congressman Overstar is scheduled to share his concerns with your committee, we understand, on the 20th of February. Highway 53, Duluth to International Falls. There's $50 million in federal funds sitting idle to widen the dangerous road from Virginia to Cook. We're waiting 6 years for the Gashport DOT to match that money. And now we have this great opportunity with U.S. Representative Jim Oberstar from Minnesota chairing the House Transportation Committee, and we can't step up to the plate. Mr. Chairman and members, ignoring workers proves very costly. This is a picture of oil slick on a highway road. Motley to Bemidji, Highway 64. The department changed the bituminous mix without talking to road workers. Oil leaked through the overlay in the heat. There were 7 rollovers in a 15-mile stretch in 2006. This was an incredibly costly error by DOT management. $70,000 for emergency grading, $500,000 for new asphalt. Our frontline workers are the experts. DOT should be consulting with them, working with them, making them part of the solution, not treating them as part of the problem. HF 546, Senate File 440, the bill before you, is one that we think will increase taxpayer accountability. Fans of outsourcing claim we save money by privatizing public services. HF 546, the Taxpayer Accountability Act, would make them prove it. Let's assume the Department of Transportation thinks it can save money by outsourcing snow plowing. With this legislation, the DOT would have to figure in the cost of closing its garages, firing its workers, and selling its fleet of plows. There should be substantial cost savings for that kind of upheaval. Agencies should explain why they can't provide a service with current or additional public employees. Agencies shouldn't estimate the cost of transitioning to a private, should estimate the cost of transitioning to a private vendor. Private vendors applying to take over a public service should provide wages and benefits equal to the average wages and benefits provided to public employees being replaced. Mr. Chairman, DOT workers can do nearly any job better, faster, and a lower cost than the private sector. For example, we can stripe roads for 8 cents a stripe. Private vendors charge 28 to 32 cents per stripe. It's irresponsible, we believe, to outsource when public employees can do the work for 1/4 the cost. Requirements of HF 546 are easy to comply with. The benefit of taxpayer protection far outweighs any minor schedule delays. Our members are users of public transit, too. We believe there needs to be more choices. Our City of Minneapolis employees already enjoy MetroPass with trains and buses dropping them off at City Hall. Many AFSCME members, as well as other Minnesota citizens, spend more time in traffic than they do with their kids. They want alternatives to driving alone in bumper-to-bumper traffic. They're eager to ride North Star between St. Cloud and Minneapolis. In fact, we'd like to see a high-speed train between Duluth and the Twin Cities. Let's keep Minnesota moving, Mr. Chairman. Governor Plante's State of the State was about paying for performance and investing for the future. yet only one sentence of his 45-minute speech was about transportation. It's our job to get Minnesota moving. ASPE and its 2,660 members who work for DOT are here to help. Our state workforce is the 13th leanest in the nation and the most productive in the nation. Minnesota cannot prosper if we continue to cut public infrastructure and undervalue public employees. It's time to invest in transportation and the workers who keep Minnesota moving. I would just remind you, and I ask you all to take a look at this story in today's paper, which lays out a great deal of the facts about what's going on in terms of shortages, in terms of cutbacks, and the impact on Minnesotans. With me today as well, Mr. Chairman, we have Mike Busing, who's president of Council 5, and a design worker in the Department of Transportation, John McGovern, chair of our Transportation Policy Committee and a maintenance worker in Duluth, Bart Anderson, chair of our State Employee Policy Committee and a bridge inspector, Gary Zeck from Local 106 in Owatonna, a DOT plow driver, and Julie Blyle, our transportation specialist. We're here to answer any questions you have. We appreciate the opportunity to make these comments, and we hope you pass 546 today, as well as another series of transportation bills.
Thank you, Mr. Syed. I appreciate everything you've done because you have a lot of things there. I didn't expect that we're going to have all of this. I was concerned about the bill, and I think to some degree you did get in the bill, and I presume those gentlemen or persons that are with you would testify as to the nature of employees and outsourcing, and I guess what you did a good job on the others. So we'll see what kind of questions we have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hoberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if it's now the time for questions or...
Right.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'm kind of surprised about this bill. Some of us are calling it, if you can't save the taxpayers 10%, don't save them a dime. And in your words, you said that, like in the case of striping, you could do it for one quarter the cost. Why aren't you, as a union and as MnDOT employees, willing to compete on an even field? Why the need for the 10% bump?
We are willing to compete.
Mr. Syed.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, we do every day compete on an even keel. A lot of times the contractors don't. What we find happening is that when we compare our price to their price, if they want to do a plow our road or do something else, they count our sand salt mixture against their price. They count our equipment against their price. We take the cost on our end. They take the savings on our end, and you don't have apples against apples. Bob, do you have another
Mr. Chair,
Representative Holberg,
if you have an apples-to-apples bid, I would think that if you were really standing behind your word and your work, that you would be able to compete on an even playing field and not need the 10%. I just don't understand this. And then for the author of the bill, Representative Hornstein, why wouldn't you, in this report, require the costs of the MnDOT employees for providing these kinds of services? If we as the legislature really want to learn something about how the taxpayer can get the best value for the dollar in transportation, I mean, your report is totally one-sided, your requirement. And so if we're talking apples to apples, let's see a report that shows apples to apples as well.
Mr. Chairman,
I don't know if that was a question or a statement, Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, that was a statement for the bill author.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to have Mr. Syed respond specifically to that.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, and members, Bob Hilliker, who deals with these situations all the time, can answer the question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holbert, I would say 10 or 20 times we have put together bids, our membership, their managers, to compete on contract work for bridges, for light poles. We've presented those bids to management. They pooped them and walked away from us. And they did not even take us up on a bid, which we showed, putting all the overhead possibly could into it, that we could do it quite a bit cheaper.
Well, that, Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, that further supports my point. If these guys want to compete and they put together bids, put them in the report. Put it in black and white, just like you're asking the contractors to put their prices in black and white, so we as a legislature can see that comparative analysis. I mean, I want the taxpayers to get the best value for the dollar, and in your little handout here, you talk about that MnDOT's for the contractors, and ask me, the taxpayers are our customers, but the nature of your bill says that you guys get a 10% bump against any comers, any competitors. And I don't think, if I was out shopping, and I knew I had two stores that I could shop in, and one that was going to be the real price, and one that I knew no matter what was going to be 10% differential because of who ran the store, I know which store I'd go to. I wouldn't go to the one that had the built-in 10% differential no matter what to get the contract.
Mr. Said.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Julie Blylart, transportation lobbyist, will address further address this question.
Okay.
Julie?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crawford.
Welcome to the committee. Would you state your name for the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5. Representative Holberg, you're combining the two sections. You're combining the reporting section together with the applicability section. And from our standpoint, there's a separate reporting section that was utilized. This bill's been introduced in the past four years to bring forward to the legislature a list of contracts. Actually, this language was adopted as part of the omnibus bill, you probably remember, last year. And that's what we're getting at with the reporting section. The 10% deals with section, if I get my numbers right here, applicability dealing with subsection B. So if you're combining the two sections.
Mr. Chair, I'm making two separate points here. I'm not combining the sections. I'm saying that if you're going to do a report, and if you're standing here as a union before us supporting this bill, saying we can compete with the private sector, and we want to show that we can compete with the private sector, I'm asking, then why shouldn't the report show what your costs for doing this same work are, and why do you, as part of the bill, require a 10% bonus? I don't understand that, and when I look at the criteria in determining the contract, it talks about the quality of the work, and it says on page 2, line 20, point number 3, the proposed privatization contract is in the public interest. You know, your standards for the 10% bonus are, well, that's probably not the right term. I don't know if the work is the same, the quality is the same, but the price is 10% different, how can that be in the public's interest? You talked about the spending power of your members. Whether a worker works for the state or they work for Acme Street Company, their dollar has the same buying potential no matter where it comes from. So, I mean, I don't buy that point. Either, but if you know, stand up and put in the report the state costs as well, so the legislature can see the difference between the two.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, I would just comment that with regard to our public employees, their costs are well known in terms of their salaries and their benefits. As we move forward and look at the contractors and how they move through this process, there's contracts let within the Department of Transportation as well as other agencies that we have no clue. We have absolutely no clue what the real costs are. And that's what we're trying to get at with this bill.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman?
We got Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Have you presented this bill to the Senate as yet?
Not yet. Mr. Okay. Chairman, Representative Earhart, not yet.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, are you aware of any excessive sell-off of machinery and equipment from MnDOT in the last year or two that would be not obsolete and all that sort of stuff, but just sell-off?
Mr. Hillick?
I'm not sure if you call it sell-off. I mean, some districts have, over time, eliminated their equipment that we use for maintenance, heavy equipment. We used to have a lot of heavy equipment. They don't have the staff anymore, so they get rid of it. So either they contract it out or lease it out. We use a paver in the metro. Metro has its own paver. I understand that next year they're going to lease one because the one they got is getting old and they want to get rid of it. So as far as selling off, you know, I don't think they're selling off. They just don't have any operators, so they get rid of it. And there's no grand plan to get rid of everything, I don't think.
We represent Earhart.
Oh, that's all.
He's finished. Represent Nelson.
I guess the question I have reading the bill gets into, you're talking here on work that currently is being done by state employees. You're not talking about the construction. I read here the incidental work on line 115, the construction, and I guess you're not talking about taking over the construction of new highways and adding staff or and taking the work away that's already being done by contractors. You're talking about not having your work contracted out. Is that what the intent here is?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, yeah, we don't do, MnDOT employees don't do new construction. They never have. We're not suggesting that they do new construction. That goes to, you know, construction companies that bid for it and have the ability to do it, and we hope they're unionized companies with unionized members, because union workforces always do better work than non-unionized workforces. We're talking about not privatizing existing design, inspection, survey. I mean, look what's going on in this country, folks, Mr. Chairman and members. I mean, if it's E. coli because we don't have inspection of the agricultural industry, if it's, you know, self-inspection just does not work in America. It's breaking down all across this country. It's our responsibility, government's responsibility, to provide oversight, and that's what this bill does, to make sure that taxpayer dollars are being spent efficiently and effectively. If taxpayers are our customers, and that's really our rhetoric, then it's time we start acting that way. We cannot account for all the different types of projects. Just the Wakota Bridge alone and the overruns on that are far more than 10% or 15%, not counting the years in delay. It's long over time that this legislature and this government passed the oversight necessary to protect taxpayers. No, we're not looking at taking jobs away from other people. We're looking to make sure that unionized workforce in the construction industry do the unionized jobs, that we do the design and the oversight and the surveying, and that we continue to do the maintenance, because we all do it best.
Representative Nelson, follow up or not?
Well, I understand that we can't specify union. It's got to be. I'd be happy
That's
with
my opinion.
I'd be happy with prevailing wage, and I have my opinions on that also. That, but I know we can't stress union. We have to, if the laws are paying the prevailing wage and they're in getting the cost. I agree with your statement there. And having worked in the private sector doing construction work and worked in the public sector doing construction work, I agree with your overall premise that usually we can do it as cheaply or better or cheaper when we do it inside, because we don't have the profit put on top of the cost of what's going on, what the person's charging you for. So, you know, if we do it ourselves, design it ourselves, so go that way. I agree with your overall statement, but I've just got, like I said, a concern where I come out of the construction industry that the way this bill says it, it could be, someone could construe it as saying that, no, we're trying to take over the construction work and put on that work on the state employees.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, we don't want to cannibalize other people's work. We don't want our work cannibalized either. That's what we're intending to do with this bill.
Thank you. Representative Magnus.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I've got a question on the fiscal note as we for Representative Hornstein. As I understand this, it's $100,000 a year to analyze contracts for $25,000 above $25,000. Is that correct,
Mr. Chair? Representative Mangus, we could have Ms. Zoer's comment on it, but my understanding from conversations with MnDOT is that these they will have to hire, or there will be some staffing positions to comply with the reporting requirements in the bill, and that's primarily what the fiscal note entails. But
Zoer's, would you care to comment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, yes, that's correct. It would be $100,000 for contracts over $25,000, and then an additional $50,000 for contracts over the $250,000.
Mr. Chairman, and then $10,000 a year to provide the annual report. Does the report go to the legislature then, according to the bill, correct? Is that correct?
Representative Ornstein?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, yes. And, you know, like all these types of reports, they're public reports. They're available to the public and appropriate state agencies as well as elected officials.
Well, Mr. Chairman, another question I have is on page 3 of the fiscal note, about in the middle there, it says that these additional requirements would add approximately 2 to 3 hours time to execute each contract. Could you comment on that a little bit, just how that fits in here and what the cost? I don't see a cost to that. What that would cost the total program here?
I wonder, Representative Magnus. I see that's prepared by Norman Foster, the Department of Revenue. We could ask Ms. Sewers. You know, can you respond to that or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, I believe, based on my reading of this, that the 2 to 3 hours of extra time is included in the $1,000 or $100,000 per year. As Representative Hornstein said, that there would be a couple of extra positions with the additional $160,000 per year.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Chairman, at the top of page 3, as I understand it, about the department estimates that at least 1,000 contracts a year would be evaluated. So if you take 2 to 3 hours, that'd be 2 to 3,000 hours again onto that. I don't see where that comes in here. But are they paying prevailing wage to do that? That's what I want. I just want to know if they're paying the prevailing wage to analyze the contracts.
Representative Mason?
Okay. What I have is more of a comment, and I'm hoping that we are really going to be focusing on accountability and effective oversight. And in talking with a neighbor of mine who does work for MnDOT, and this went back to about a year ago, his frustration was that within his department, they were using a private contractor. The job didn't get done right. He'd have to go out and repair the work, but it was made very clear to him that he was not supposed to be complaining or register any complaint about the inferior work. So I think, you know, we do have our work cut out for us as to doing some effective accountability and reporting.
Well, I don't think that.
Representative Ruth? Representative Ruth?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess it's a bit of a comment. I'm just a little concerned that Highway 14 had Mathewis Construction that is non-union. So are you telling me that when I'm driving on the road now, I'm going to be falling through large cracks because it will be inferior to what the union contractor would have done? That's what I'm hearing you say.
Mr. Ayed?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ruth, I made a overall comment that I do believe that unionized contractors and unionized work is done more effectively, more efficiently, quicker, and more cheaply than non-unionized work. Because when people are paid right, when they're professionally trained, when they're treated with dignity, respect, which I'm sure you want them to be treated with, then they do a better job for the public. That was simply my comment. I think it stands on its own.
Well, Mr. Chair, we can all have our own opinion, but we've certainly been very happy with the construction that we've seen, and it's been done within time, and certainly seems to be very reasonable. We've saved money through MnDOT, so we've been very, very fortunate, and also able to have a contractor who is rural that has been able to do the business. So it's about jobs. So,
Representative Earhart?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hornstein, if ASME folks don't do the highway construction, but they rather do the maintenance projects, as I understand what you said earlier, then why are we including private contractor work to do the construction in here?
Well, Representative Hornstein.
Okay, I will defer to Mr. Side, but I think, you know, there are a number of different kinds of employees that are affected by this practice, is my understanding. But I'll let Mr. Said. Mr. Ehrhardt.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Ehrhardt, I'll answer part of this and ask Bob Hilliker to answer the rest. On the construction side, AFSCME members in the Department of Transportation do design work, they do survey work, they do inspection work. This is work that we showed in that previous graph that has been piloted to be contracted out. So basically, you go to a self-inspection system. The design gets done on the outside by the contractor. That's work that's also done by department folks. Bob, are there other pieces to that?
Well, we do the survey, we do the design, we do the inspection on the projects, pre-design, they do the finals on them. A lot of that work is in-house, some of it's contracted out currently, and that's some of the concern, is how far does it go? And if you look at some of the examples we put in the packet, and we put one in there that should concern you all about a sign project up in Detroit Lakes, and the comments from the management team kind of shocked me when I read that. And I think the work that we do is not build them, we maintain them. Some of it we maintain, some of it we don't. We design it, we inspect it, we survey it, you know, all of those sorts of things. Some of it's outsourced, and it's kind of a mix, a balance of the monies, and it's kind of been the practice for many, many years. But now it seems to be growing, that more of it is outsourced, and, you know, more of our people are not filled behind. I mean, we've got vacancies by the hundreds in these positions. We keep getting told, well, we don't have enough people to do the work, so we've got to outsource it. Even though they'll say to my face, this cost us 25 to 30% more. And I look at them and think, well, it makes no sense to me. I mean, in your question about us bidding, I mean, I'm not getting into the bidding situation here, but if we can put together a program that says we can do it cheaper, and we've done that with the striping, we can do it with the sign replacement, with other jobs that aren't taking over the contractor's work, why aren't they letting our folks do it instead of cutting the membership and saying we don't have the people or the money to do it?
Well, Mr. Chairman, are you looking to expand into the construction business as well here or what? Otherwise, why do we have construction in here? This is a pretty broad-based brushstroke, it seems to me.
Mr. Chairman, it says work incidental, if I could, Mr. Chairman, Representative Ehrhardt. If you go to line 115, you can see that what it says is work incidental to the construction improvement or maintenance of trunk highway. And, you know, that would include surveying, that would include design, that would include inspection. I'll say it again, we have never constructed new roads in the department. That's not our job. This bill doesn't do that. This bill simply begins the process of finally having this state be able to account for the tax expenditures it's making in the form of contracted dollars and making sure that that money is being spent prudently, intelligently, and to the benefit of taxpayers. We do not, I want to say again, be real clear, we don't expect to do the construction of new roads. That's why the word, Mr. Chairman, Representative Ehrhardt, says incidental. We do, I want to clarify again, we do AFSCME members in the department, when we have AFSCME members to do the work, we used to have lots of them, design, survey, inspection, and other things related to design, but not the actual building of the road itself, sir.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I was reading the bill summary, which talks about, it doesn't say incidental in here, which is different. It says highway construction. When I read the line that you pointed out in the bill, that perhaps makes a difference.
Mr. Chairman, I can't explain the bill summary. I can only point to line 115 of the bill.
I think Representative Ehrhardt saw it now. We're kind of really pressed for time here, and if there are more further questions, I'd appreciate it, or else we should have further testimony. Representative Hornstein, we have a couple other bills, and I think there's people.
Mr. Chair, I'm very happy to. I know that the MnDOT has some concerns. There's others that have concerns, and I would be very happy to yield to them if there aren't further questions.
So any further questions?
I have a question,
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Magnus.
You have thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed on your slide here, and you talked about it, that we're 191 drivers, snowplow drivers short in the state. And I know lately, the last several years, we haven't had a lot of snow, frankly. And I was watching the TV and saw where that town in New York had, what, 8, 9, 10 feet of snow. Yeah. And I don't know what we would do then. But, and I don't mean to be sarcastic or smart about this at all, but if someone asked me about this, okay, if you're not driving a snowplow, then what did these 190 folks do?
Mr. Chairman, if it's all right,
Mr. Hilliker
to answer that question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Vegas. I mean, that's the flaw in this thing. Everybody believes that all our folks do is plow snow in the winter, yeah. And they sit around and wait for it to snow. That's not a fact. That's 10%, 15% of their job. The other things they do are fix the potholes, fix the guardrail, fix the fence, which are safety issues out there. I know you're going to say all the potholes ain't fixed, and that's true. We don't have enough people to fix them all. But that's what they do on non-snow and ice. The snow and ice event is 15, 20% of their job. The rest of their job is to maintain the road system, and they're busy doing that at all times.
Representative Holberg?
Mr. Chair, I was just hoping that we'd be able to hear from MnDOT on this bill as well. We spent nearly an hour.
Yes, they're on the schedule, and that's why I went moving along.
Thank you,
gentlemen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Representative Kalin had a question before you leave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick clarification question, I guess, for the author, Representative Hornstein. We've talked in the past about the need for a MnDOT sunshine bill and the desire for that. My understanding is that we're getting this gets towards that end, a better accountability. But to my question, I have Schaefer Contractor that's in my district that is doing major work on some pretty significant projects. And I just want to make sure that I do understand this correctly, that the new construction from contractors like Schaefer and others is not to be affected by this bill. But we're talking about the surveying work and the other work, as it says, incidental, but that there's no desire of AFSCME to actually penetrate into the private market of road construction.
Mr. Say.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we'd be happy just to keep the work we have and do it as effectively and efficiently as we've been doing it for 40, 50 years. We're not looking to expand into the private construction business.
Right. I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Side. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further testimony from MnDOT. Welcome to the committee, Betsy Parker.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. I will try to be fairly brief because I know you have two other bills that you want to hear today, but I would like to do three things. I would like to make a brief attempt to respond to some of the charges that were leveled here, since we had no warning that that was going to come. We anticipated some complaints about outsourcing of maintenance activities, but not the extensive discussion about the management of the department, funding proposals, and things like that. The other thing is that this bill is basically a bill about contracts, and so I would like to talk to you specifically about how we feel it affects MnDOT's process of negotiating and executing contracts. And then the third thing, right up front, I would like to offer that MnDOT would be very happy to sit down with AFSCME and with Representative Hornstein and have a more detailed discussion about what are the specific things that are of concern to them with respect to MnDOT's contracting with the private sector, and see if we can narrow down the scope of the bill and work out some way to address the concerns. It was pointed out that there was an amendment made to the Omnibus Transportation Bill, but it was not this particular bill. It was not enacted last year. It was a significantly reduced annual reporting requirement that covered 6 or 7 specific kinds of contracts, and that's the sort of thing we would like to talk about. First of all, I would like to say that everyone is concerned about the cost of all government services provided to taxpayers, and MnDOT is very concerned about those costs as well. We're also very concerned about providing the best possible service to the people on the road and to all the citizens of the state. That is not a minor issue for us. We go to great lengths to attempt to determine what is the appropriate level of services to provide with the resources that we have, and to do the best job that we can with all of our employees whom we value. There were a number of statements made in this presentation, which we have not seen before, that were simply not correct. And I'm not going to go through all of it, but I would like to mention just a couple things because I think it's only fair to mention those things. First of all, 2006 was the safest year on record with respect to traffic safety. It is not true that the roads are getting more dangerous. In fact, every year the roads are getting safer. In 2006, we had the fewest number of fatalities on Minnesota highways that we have had since 1945. We had a record safe year. Now, we believe that every fatality is one too many, and we intend to continue to work to reduce those. But if you looked at our performance measure chart, it would show fatalities dropping steadily over the last 5 years. Another thing that was mentioned was that the urban area is robbing the rural area. That is not correct. If you look at the statistics from the department about how much money, both state and federal, was spent in the rural area, you will see that in every one of the last 5 or 6 years, which is 5 or 6 or 7, I don't know if we go beyond that, more money was spent in the rural area than in the metro area. And it's roughly something like 55 or 56% spent in the non-metro counties, and somewhere in the neighborhood of 43 to 45% of the total funding spent in the metro area. So it is simply not true that the metro area is robbing the rural areas. Now, with respect to the staffing numbers, I don't have with me any information about the number of layoffs that we had. And we did have some in 2003, that is correct. But they do not approach the number that was quoted to you by the AFSCME representatives. We also had involuntary layoffs where people decided to retire and take benefits, and then we had other kinds of layoffs. We had, or the involuntary layoffs, and we had some positions that were not filled. With respect to federal funding is not tied to pavement condition. And with respect to the fracture critical bridges, in the PowerPoint they showed you, they had the number 30%. We have checked with the bridge office, which reports to us that somewhere in the neighborhood of 2% of trunk highway bridges are fracture critical. It is nothing even close to 30%. With respect to design-build always goes out for bid, and normally we have 3 to 5 bidders. It is never a case of selecting a single bidder, and those bids are reviewed much more extensively than the kinds of bids we get on low bid. Those bids are not reviewed at all with respect to the quality of them, comparable to the design-build, which goes through 2 stages of review, first to qualify the bidders, and second, to do a comprehensive technical review and then a price review. In addition, those projects, like all MnDOT projects, have oversight from MnDOT employees. In some cases, we do contract with consultants for additional quality oversight, but there is always MnDOT oversight. With respect to Trunk Highway 53, we did not receive $50 million that is sitting idle. Federal funds do not all come in a lump in 1 year. They come spread out over the length of the federal authorization bill, and in many cases, federal funds are sought for projects that are not in the ATP, the Area Transportation Partnership list, and until a local match can be arranged, those funds cannot be used. In addition, with respect to striping, we have centralized striping in Minnesota, or in MnDOT, so that it's handled from a central MnDOT location. Now, I would like to talk specifically about some of the contract issues. We have no objection to oversight of our contracting process. We are perfectly happy to provide the legislature all the information that it wishes to have about our contracting process. In the department, when you add up all of the different kinds of contracts and amendments to those contracts that we have, they number somewhere around 2,500 a year. That is a lot of contract review. Approximately 40% of those are professional technical consultant contracts, and a large number of those are design, which is one of the areas that we acknowledge is of concern to AFSCME. 20% of our contracts are construction contracts, but we have many more contracts that probably no one is particularly interested in reviewing, and those fall under the headings of state aid, transit and railroad grants that are made to all of the transit services in the states and for rail grade crossing improvements. Utility, all the utility relocation that's done for construction work is done through a MnDOT contract. We have municipal agreements for sharing services. We do some for locals. Locals do some for us that are all part of our contracting process. We have railroad agreements for relocating railroads in construction, and we have leases where we lease property to other people in some cases. We have contracted for design, preliminary engineering, environmental testing, and rail right-of-way appraisals for years, and we intend to continue doing that. We have been saying for approximately the last 6 years that the department, because of the increasing need for highway projects, the relatively flat amount of funding available from the funding, constitutional funding sources that we have, that we have peaks and valleys in our construction program. As the legislature appropriates money, as it did in 2000 and again in 2003, so rather than staff up to peak levels, we attempt to keep the department staffed at a level that will support a construction program of roughly $450 million. And then when the legislature appropriates money and that level rises, then we naturally turn to consultants for that work. In addition, we also use contracts for special expertise. For example, a lot of environmental work and testing is done in that way. With respect to maintenance, I have some figures for 2006 for contracting out of a couple specific kind of maintenance activities. One of them has to do with pavement patching. These are numbers that we received from our district offices. With respect to the patching of pavement in 2006, MnDOT spent $4.1 million having that work done by MnDOT staff, and $40,000 was contracted out. With respect to bridge preventive maintenance, MnDOT spent $906,000 using MnDOT staff, and $1.6 million was contracted out. With respect to striping in 2006, MnDOT spent $5.6 million doing that work with its own maintenance forces and contracted out $700,000, or roughly 10% of that amount. We do recognize that there's a lot of concern among AFSCME members about the possibility of increasing to do more private contracting. And so we would be happy to sit down and talk about narrowing the scope of that activity. That's something that we did last year, and we'd be happy to do it again. I met with Representative Hornstein earlier today, and he offered to help facilitate such a meeting, which we would be happy to do. We would also welcome the opportunity to provide additional information to you either in another hearing or in writing about some of the information today that we can't respond to, that we think puts the department and its employees in a bad light in an unfair way.
Are you, did you complete?
I'm finished.
I was just waiting because I'm a little concerned. I have mixed emotions both ways. We strayed pretty far from the intent of the bill, frankly. I didn't feel cutting them off, and I don't want to cut you off. Mm-hmm. But there are certainly questions that it appears to me perhaps we should have a full hearing, because we're really, and I think I'm a little familiar with the situation, frankly, on all the issues. So both sides are a little bit far out. I wonder, Representative Hornstein, if you want to proceed further in this, we'll vote. But we have some other bills out, and I'd like to keep moving on it. I don't know what your wishes would be, but as far as I'm concerned, I think we probably should have, whether it's on this bill, it was my intent always to have a issue on maintenance. The maintenance issue came here, and I think that's a question, Ms. Parker, that we're not addressing fully. I have had contacts from employees and district engineers, and there's a real problem in the maintenance area. We're not concerned so much about contract. Contracts is different. I think that was pretty well pointed out in here. but we definitely have some problems, I think, in the area of maintenance, and those is what kind of came up with both your issues and Mr. Syed. There's no doubt about it. I think we got to get a little head banging in here sometime. But Mr. Hornstein, well, Representative Hornstein,
thank you, Mr.
I don't know what your wishes are. We do have some other testimony,
Mr.
I think.
Mr. Chair, I think there were larger issues, certainly, in the AFSCME presentation. I think they did provide good context for this. You know, there was discussion of the gas tax. We're going to deal with that. There was discussion of...
We got way out.
So I think we do have a good focus on this bill. I thought that, again, in my meetings with both sides on this, you know, we can work together to address some of those concerns as we move ahead. But I think there was a specific focus, and there is a specific problem here that I think there is consensus on that needs to be addressed. And so with that, I would like to continue to move this very specific bill, understanding that there were larger questions that and raised in the AFSCME presentation that we're going to debate on a number of other bills later in the session.
That's great. The chair would temporarily lay the bill over with the committee. Are there questions?
Mr. Chair, I thought if you were going to move forward, I was going to ask for a roll call vote, but as long as you're putting it on the table, so be it.
Right. I'm sorry, I didn't.
I think I heard you say you were going to lay the bill on the table, so I was raising my hand to ask for a roll call vote. So.
Okay, yeah. That's okay, Representative Hornstein.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I would want to know your intention in terms of the future process. Would you like to see this bill again in a different form, or what's your thought here?
Well, I thought I'd review that. We see which way we can always recall a bill and bring it back up, and we should probably review to what extent we want to get into this whole, because we need more committee time, frankly.
Okay.
I think on it.
I understand, but, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
If not, we'll temporarily continue this bill later, probably. That's my intent.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Could I just... is Mr. Fricke in the audience? Or Rob? Could I just ask you a question, Mr. Fricke? Could we temporarily put your bill till the next committee meeting? You're around? Would that be okay? We'll hear the other bill then, because we'll be running out of time. Mr. Fricke, don't leave. I guess the other people had to go to another committee meeting, so we'll take your bill up.
But this is not for either design build.
We
don't think it's limited by
Representative Leader, would you like to put your bill into consideration here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 562 be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 562 deals with a township sign replacement program. Right now, the townships, previously, a number of years ago, they did get federal money, and there was a program statewide for all the townships to participate, and they did participate, and actually it's quite a while ago, and the sign program is available again through federal monies. It's kind of a pass-through with some state matches, and what this bill would do is provide some match for some of the federal monies that are coming down. If we don't take advantage of that, it's, again, it's one of those situations, if you don't take advantage of that money, it isn't going to be available here. It'll go somewhere else. And I have two testifiers, Mr. Chair, if they may testify.
Good. Mr. Frickie?
Mr. Chair, I'm Dave Frickie, Executive Director for the Minnesota Association of Townships. Back in 2005, as your summary states there, the legislature adopted a program for the township road safety sign program. Didn't put any money with it at the time. And we went to Congress, and in 2005, the federal safety lieu program specifically provided for a high priority project in Section 1702 of that federal act. And it provided for the Township Road Hazard Sign Replacement Program. And it provided us here in Minnesota, and the only state in the country, with $3 million. We've taken that $3 million and put together six pilot projects, six counties in Minnesota, to look at trying to redo the program that was done back in the 1989-90, in that era, when we originally did about 150,000 hazard signs in across the state on our rural township road. We have almost 59,000 miles of road, and we too are real keen on having safety. And safety, whether it's on our bridges, whether it's on the roads, and a key to that for the traveling public are these hazard signs. There's been a lot of changes to the reflectivity of the signs. There's been changes to how the signs are put up, what kind of structures they're on. And we've looked for some additional help, and Congress gave us a taste of that. What we would like to do with the bill that we're working with here in our efforts to work towards zero deaths on our highways, and I think we're doing a good job. We've saved a lot of lives doing it the first time. We'd like to have enough money put in into this bill that would allow us, and we will be going back to Congress, trying to get some additional supplemental money. This entire program, if we did the whole state, I told you we're going to take $3 million and do six counties. If we do the whole state, we're looking at a program, and some of the towns do a good job of keeping their signs up, some aren't so good. But if we resurvey and redo the sign program in the state and set up a maintenance program for them, we think that we're probably looking at somewhere in the $25 million to $30 million cost over a number of years to do this statewide. And so as an initial startup here to get this thing going and to have, as was stated in the original bill that we passed, it says we're going to have this program until we get some state or federal funding. Well, we've got some limited federal funding. We're going to go back up there and ask to see if we can get some additional federal funding towards that. And we'd like to have the state at least extend a hand. If we did a 20% match on what we have, it's $600,000. To go back to the federal government with that doesn't mean anything to them. So we would like very much at least to initiate this today and go through the process as we have the last several years. This bill, similar bill to this, passed last year through the House, through the Senate, was in conference committee. At the very end when it was deleted. And so today we would like to put a number in the blank line there of $2 million.
Unless there's some questions, Mr. Chair.
Are there any questions? Or we have another testifier?
I'm just here for questions.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'll ask a question then, Representative Leader. Are we expecting any direct money from the federal government, or is this all matching money, or how do we get the feds interested in?
They gave us a $3 million direct appropriation, Mr. Chairman, and we're using that right now, regardless, for the pilots. Rick Jonas from MnDOT is here. They've been coordinating that in the through their office. We're working with the counties and county engineers and with their insurance group. But it's a real cooperation program between the units of government to try to build on our safety on our roads.
Where does the money reside? Does MnDOT have the pot of money, or?
Wants to know where the money resides.
A federal money that you already have received, is that on a bank account with MnDOT or with the townships? Or?
Mr. Chair, I'm Rick Jonas from the Division of State Aid of MnDOT. Yes, this is federal money, HPP money, that is passed through Federal Highway to MnDOT and to the Office of State Aid, and then we're administering the contract for the counties on behalf of the townships.
And how much is in the pot now?
The original bill was $3 million, as Dave Fricke said, and the appropriation that we expect to get is 85% of that, so around $2.4 million is our expectation. We've received 40% of that so far. It's coming to us 20% per year. And right now we are in the process of awarding engineering work to do the inventory and sign recommendations for the six townships within the next month.
Okay, thank you. Representative Severson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a little clarification. I think when we're talking, I'm trying to do the math in my head. We're talking about leveraging the $3 million using about a $600,000 input, and that's for the pilot programs. The overall program, you're asking for what number for the $25 million to do a statewide over so many years?
Mr. Fricke?
Mr. Chair, as it says in here, this kind of runs as an appropriation until 2009. Our hope is that we can go back to the federal government and get a substantial additional amount of money by saying the state's willing to commit, and this would allow us to get another $9-12 million from the federal government, or say that we're willing to offer up that kind of match if they'll give us some additional dollars. So it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, we're going to get a whole lot more money or be able to do this whole program. We'll be back again, I'm sure, talking to you about it. But the commitment is, at least at this stage here, when it comes out at the end of the session, maybe it won't be this number, but at least going back to Washington at the end of the month and asking them, saying that at least the committee recognized the need for this and is willing to help support it. That's where we're at.
Representative Stevenson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a follow-up question. I'm trying to get a handle on the whole program. What is the life expectancy of a sign out there that we would
back in 89 when we did the signs, life expectancy was probably less than 10 years because of the materials that were on the sign. The new material, the glass materials that we have, the types of materials that are being used, they won't guarantee it, but they'll say 15 years, maybe up to 20 years life on some of the glass signs. We also, the maintenance program that we're looking at actually sets down which direction these signs sit, the GPS, the signs, and so they can actually set a time period and do a maintenance program. If it's facing north or it's facing west into the sun or whatever, we can get a better handle on the overall maintenance into the future. We've got these approximately 150,000 signs that we put up, and for the traveling public, this is going to be an ongoing kind of thing for the townships to raise dollars, to have them replaced periodically, to do an ongoing maintenance program. So this is just an additional shot to go out and make sure that we've got the right signs in the right place to do a maintenance program. There may, in the future, someday off, we may have to do another survey to, you know, if the federal government and the state changes the classifications and how high the signs ought to be. And so we'll work on that, but we're trying to get a real program set up here that functions for the local governments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Some would say that the maintenance period or the longevity is one hunting season, so.
Depends on whether they got a buck or not, yeah.
Mr. Chair, one of my township officials today, they said they've got a sign, which I shouldn't say is even here. I'm not going to tell you where it is, but it shouldn't exist because it doesn't read very well, and it doesn't have one bullet hole in it.
Is there any other, are there any other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Magnus.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for bringing this up, Mr. Chairman Leader. I carried this bill the last several years, and I tell you what, we didn't get funding last year for it through the omnibus transportation bill. We need funding bad for this, and I support your cause and encourage the committee to support the bill.
Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to testify for or against this? Representative Leader, would you like to renew your motion? Who has?
No, it's okay.
Not, Mr. Chair. I'll renew my motion to that House File 562 be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee.
You don't keep it here? Wait, does it say here?
Okay. We have to fill in the blank here, I guess, Representative Leader.
Beg your pardon? Fill in the blank was to... Yeah, oh, that's right. We didn't put in the blank.
Oh, here's the bill with a blank.
Yeah, that... I'd move that $2 million be inserted in the blank. That's... we do have a blank bill.
Any other questions on that?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I was assuming that this would be part of a transportation finance omnibus bill, or you're thinking it will be funded separately in the Finance Committee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, it has to be sent to the Finance Committee first, and it's going to come back to this committee, and then we'll probably determine whether it should go on its own or be rolled in. With Representative House, with the nature of this bill and the fact that it's lost, the last time was vetoed, and it's really imperative for the townships to get it, it might be better if it moves on its own rather than taking a chance somewhere down the road. Well, we get a chance both ways. But it's my intent, I think, to make it go on its own.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, is the amount $2 million then?
Well, it's $2 million. We'll vote on the amendment. All in favor of the $2 million placed in the blank on the bill, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted,
I can renew my motion to this file 562 be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Division or Committee.
Committee? I think.
We're all divisions.
Any more comments? Otherwise, all in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The bill is passed and sent on its way to the Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We did that for the townships, even though they just let themselves be used on the House floor.
Okay. Yeah.
By the minority. I was not very happy about that.
You mean that?
I could ask. Members of the committee, Representative Hortman isn't here to present her bill, but we do have some testifiers in the audience, and if it's okay, the chair would move the bill and we could hear the testimony from this person. I think she came a distance, and then we could pick up the bill in the next committee if that's...
Sure.
Any objections?
Go ahead.
If not, see, I'd have to move the bill anyhow late over, wouldn't I, Ron? I'd have to move the bill to get testimony. The chair will move that House file.
Senator Burke.
Oh, okay.
Senator Burke.
I don't get paid that much.
Representative
Hortman. I don't know how fast you can go, but I mean...
I'm very fast. Brady, why don't you go ahead and come on up?
Do you want to move the bill, Representative Hortman?
I will. I move that House File 246, I believe the motion is be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Local Government.
That's correct. Representative Hortman moved that House File 246 be recommended to pass and re-referred to Local Government and Metro Affairs.
And I just want to explain the authors, the lead-all amendment. When we looked over the bill draft, there was some imprecise language as to the location. What the bill would do is it would direct the Metropolitan Council in partnership with the Center for Transportation Studies to do a study of whether it's feasible to do either commuter rail or light rail in the area of the 394 corridor. There is an existing BNSF rail line just 2 miles south of 394, so the author's delete all amendment refers to the area where that rail already exists to direct the attention of the people doing the study to that particular rail line.
Representative Hortman, did you want to make an oral amendment to, or is that in your bill now?
I would move adoption of the delete all amendment that's being
would
passed out to
we
members.
We can read it. I can have the, I'll read it. I think you're talking about in line 1.5, after the word council, insert to work in partnership with the Center of Transportation Studies and the center. Is that
well,
correct?
Mr. Chair, everything that's written on these...
Oh, you've got it written on the bill. Okay, I didn't know that.
This is a delete-all to the bill,
okay.
This entire sheet that was just passed out. And I don't know if it's a problem for us to refer to it as the SCS 0189A2 amendment.
In other words, that's the order of the bill you want. You've got it in... The way
that's right,
okay.
Mr. Chair. I'd move that amendment.
Okay, you may continue.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce to the committee Brady Priest. He lives in the corridor and commutes in that area each day, and he has a brief statement for our committee.
Good afternoon.
Excuse me again. I was thinking we had the amendment. We have to adopt the delete all amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to point to, do you want to refer to this as House File 246, or do you want to accept it as Senate File 189? Is the, how are we?
We got
The delete-all should refer to...
okay, you have to insert the Senate language. Be Senate File 189, Representative Houseman, or Hortman?
No, it should refer to House File 246.
Okay.
So if you could...
Okay. So I need to change that.
I got to amend,
Mr. Chairman,
my amendment. On the, just that first line should refer to.
We'd have to change the your motion too. To
okay, I would move the delete all amendment with the change of SF 189 to HF 246.
Any questions or comment?
No.
If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
The motion passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon. My name is Brady Priest, and I'm a resident of the City of Plymouth. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. Public transportation is a topic I feel strongly about, and I'm excited by the possibility of some form of rail system connecting the Twin Cities to the western suburbs. As I said, I'm a resident of Plymouth. I work in downtown Minneapolis as an attorney. My daily commute is approximately 12 miles, almost all of which is on the 394 corridor. On average, I would say my commute takes about 25 to 30 minutes. However, winter weather and the occasional car accident sometimes extend my commute to an hour or more. I suppose it's not that bad by most standards, though. It could be quite a lot better. I believe that a rail line connecting the western suburbs to the Twin Cities would be a great improvement to the quality of life for those who, like me, head downtown every day on what's become an ever more congested 394. I imagine I have a somewhat unique perspective on the issue of public transportation, as I'm a transplant to the state of Minnesota. I moved here 3 years ago from New York City, where I lived for approximately 5 years. During those 5 years, I used Manhattan's public transportation system on a daily basis, either to get to school or work. As someone that's commuted by both car and rail, I can honestly say that when comparing the two modes of transportation, the rail system would win every time. Commuting by rail or train provides commuters with a number of tangible benefits. The first is that, aside from what is usually a short commute from home to the train station on one end and a short commute from the train station to work or some other final destination on the other, the rest of the ride is relatively stress-free. Commuters can, and speaking from experience as someone who used to routinely get valuable study time in on the train, do get work done when riding the train. This, of course, is not possible or not completely legal when behind the wheel of a car. Beyond simply providing for more work time, which, of course, not everyone might be in favor of, commuting by train removes a number of other variables from the daily commute. Trains are reliable and run on a set schedule, and thus allow commuters to gain a form of rhythm in their daily lives. Similarly, trains are generally not hampered by the snow and ice that we face throughout the winter months in Minnesota. I should note, and I recognize that this is an important part of this discussion, that I currently use the MinPass lane or SANE lane on a regular basis when driving on 394. While the SANE lane does provide some relief from the snarl of traffic on 394, it is not always economically efficient. For example, on one day last week, the cost of riding in the SANE lane was about $8. That aside, the SANE lane also does not address the quality of life issues that I believe make a rail system such a benefit. I'm reaching the end of my comments, but I think it's worthwhile to note that on a slightly different level, there's some intangible value to a rail system that fully connects people in the suburbs to the cities. It's quite pleasant to imagine a Saturday afternoon train ride into Minneapolis to watch a Twins game, or conversely, a summer trip out to Lake Minnetonka from downtown. Both possibilities seem infinitely more pleasant when the hassle of parking and fuel costs are removed from the picture. In summary, it's clear to me that providing for a rail system on the 394 corridor would greatly increase the quality of life for those who live along that corridor. As I said before, I moved to New York from New York City. I did so mainly because Minnesota is a great place to live, and from my perspective, provides for a quality of life that simply does not exist in other big cities. It could be further improved, though, and I hope that this body will take a serious look at just how much a rail system would do towards such an improvement. Thanks.
Are there any questions of the testifier? Not. Oh, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no argument with the bill. What I'm wondering about is our direction in terms of where we're sending this to study. We have lots and lots of corridors on the map, and some of them are in study phases. And I wonder if we wouldn't want this to be incorporated into that same overall system of corridors for study.
Representative Hartman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, I talked to Chair Leader about this bill, and the bill is destined for Deborah Hillstrom's committee next, but then the intent is to have the language laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And I think what's very important when we're putting the omnibus bill together is that we look at comprehensive planning. Who should be doing it, and which corridor should they be studying? I think it's time for a system. This is one important part of that system, but we definitely have to be looking at the system.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, you know, we have a number of these bills, and I think I welcome the fact that we have so much new and renewed and energetic interest in corridors. You know, Representative Morgan will come forward with something on 35W. Representative Bunn has something related to I-94. And I'm glad that it'll come back here from local government. And so while I welcome this, I just wanted to express one concern on line 13 in terms of the feasibility of combining with Southwest Corridor. And, you know, this is a very established, studied corridor, which is now going through an alternatives evaluation environmental review. We have possibilities of combining this with the Midtown Greenway in Minneapolis. And I just hope that as these bills move forward, we are able to really interface with what's already on the ground. And hopefully, you know, I don't know if you've had conversations with Hennepin County or the people that are already on the Southwest, established Southwest Corridor Advisory Group, which includes the representatives from the city of Minnetonka, et cetera. But I'd encourage those kinds of conversations. And I think the existing Southwest Corridor is a good one, but I also think there's a need to improve transit service on 394 as well. So hopefully as this develops, we can continue that conversation.
Representative Earhart?
Just to that, Mr. Chair, I wanted to say, Representative Hornstein and Mr. Chair, that we did work with the folks at Hennepin County to come up with this language, which is why we have the delete all to the initial bill. And it's very important for me to state that I do not have any intention of doing anything, recommending any language that would slow down Southwest corridor progress.
Representative Earhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not quite sure how to say this. We don't have a system here. We have a one-shot piece of a system. Wouldn't it be nice if we were really developing a big master system instead of everybody come in here that wants a piece, Southwest Corridor, the 494 corridor, which is somebody's got a bill. I signed on to that one. And the Southwest is good. But besides that, who in the heck is the Center for Changing Landscapes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, I think Senator Bonoff can answer that question.
Thank you. I'm Senator Terry Bonoff, representing Minnetonka and Plymouth, which is the corridor, and I'm carrying this bill in the Senate. The Center for Changing Landscapes is part of the university, the Center for Transportation. They are in a different department than the Center for Transportation, but it is part of the university umbrella, and they're currently doing a study in this area. They've done a whole study on expanding the Ridgedale area, making it more friendly for affordable housing, looking at the downtown Minnetonka area. And so they were recommended as a natural, they do many of these studies, but they were recommended as a natural partner because they're working in the corridor. So I've spoken with the Center for Transportation. The Met Council works with them often.
Thank you. Representative?
Mr. Chairman, we must have an umbrella of planning here, which is the Met Council. And if they think that I happen to sit on a board on the Center for Transportation at the U, and I'm not sure that this is in their bailiwick, but maybe it is. It seems to me the Metropolitan Council or some central force should be keeping all the pieces together here.
And Mr. Chair and Senator, or Representative Earhart, I apologize. The Met Council would have the fiscal agent on this, and I have talked to the Met Council, and they do it. They partner with both of these people and are comfortable with this language.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just wanted to say, when you talk about a system, an overall system, the reason I put my hand up was that at the Burnsville meeting, I asked for Judd from Met Council to give me he had a map of the old streetcar lines, and the old streetcar lines kind of ran down this route, went all the way out to Lake Minnetonka, all the way to Stillwater. I've got the map up on the office on my wall, and it makes me cry when I look at that, the system that we threw away, that if we had continued building on that, we would have had a system comparable to what New York City has for our metropolitan area. So, I mean, it's a long time overdue.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you. Representative Hortman, do you have any other testifiers?
No.
Is there anyone in the audience that wanted to speak for or against? If not, Representative Hortman, would you kind of again review what you say is going to happen? I know it's going. We're going to send it out if it passes and comes back, but just for the membership, so that they're again, as you reiterated, I think, to represent Hausman.
I renew my motion to pass House File 246 as amended, and that it be re-referred to the Committee on Local Government.
Local Government, Metropolitan Affairs, yeah.
And Metropolitan Affairs.
And then it's referred back to Finance, or it has to go to Finance first. they refer it, I guess, to a local government. So that your motion would read, recommended to pass and re-referred to finance. And then it would be re-referred back to local government.
That's my motion, Mr. Chair.
Is there any question on that motion? Is there any comment or any further question? If not, you feel comfortable with that, huh?
I feel really good about that motion, Mr. Chair. Well,
and for the members of the committee, I think we're going to get this back. So
that's good.
It's probably going to be a little bit enlarged, I presume, too. So.
We might have to add some other corridors when it comes back.
If there aren't any further comments or questions, all in favor of the motion to re-refer or the House file to, what do we got here?
246,
is that
as
right?
Amended.
As amended, yeah.
As amended, be recommended or be referred to the Committee on Finance and with a recommendation re-referral to the Committee on Local Government and Metro Affairs. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion passed. For the members of the committee, tomorrow you got an email that the committee time was going to be changed. That was resolved. Another committee was moving in. So it's the regular committee time at 2:15 for transit, Frank Hornstein's committee, for you that are on that committee.
And three very interesting bills, members, so please be there at 2:15.
The meeting's adjourned.